Okay, first we'll chant Jai Radhamadava. Careful with the camera. Jai
Thank you. Shimari Lassi Devi Jai Samaveda Vakta Vrindika Jai Gaur
All glory is the symbol of devotees. All glory is the symbol of devotees. All glory is the symbol of devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga Shilavopati Jaya. So, Om Gana Chimananda Shah Ranjana Shalaya Chakshuran Meditam Yenatasmai Shiva Namaha. So, because we have so many nice people who come for the first time today, I thought we'd give an introduction to Krishna consciousness, explaining the basic philosophy and practices of Krishna consciousness in terms of a story. How about that? Because everyone likes stories. And I thought the story we would tell is how I came to Krishna consciousness, which is probably really interesting. So once upon a time, in the 17th century, not that old yet. So once upon a time, many, many years ago, I was looking for the truth in life. I wanted to find out the purpose of life. That is, where I came from before I was born, where I would go after I died, who was God, how was this material world created, and what's the purpose of everything. And so in order to try to find the purpose of everything, I started studying science, which is interesting. So I went to the university, a nice university in around Chicago called Northwestern University, and I was studying science, thinking that science can answer all the questions I had. Of course, I was very quickly disappointed, and I found out that science couldn't answer the questions. In fact, whatever scientific theories there were, they kept changing all the time. And even today, scientific theories keep changing. That time I was studying nuclear physics, how to make an atom bomb and destroy the world. And now we're talking about quantum mechanics and other things like that, and I'm not going to talk about that today. So, because I was very disappointed in my study of science, I started studying religion and philosophy on my own. Not so much at the university, but on my own. And I would go to various religious ceremonies or spiritual ceremonies. Of course, I also practice yoga. You've heard of yoga before? Of course, we're practicing Bhakti yoga here, which is the yoga of devotion. So I would go to various ceremonies, and then I would ask the leaders whether they were called rabbis or priests or whatever they were called, or Brahmins. I would ask them, what is the purpose of life? Where have I come from before I was born? And where am I going to go when I die? And who is God? Where does he live? What does he look like? And they said, it's a great mystery. You know, so that means they didn't know. Because if someone has been studying something their whole lives, and after, you know, 40 years of studying something, they say it's a great mystery, that means they don't know. Just like if you go to the university and someone is a mathematics professor and you ask him how much is one and one, and he says, it's a great mystery, my son. What does that mean? That means he doesn't know anything, because he's supposed to be a professor. So someone who is a priest, minister, Brahmin, whatever, and if he doesn't know A, B, C in spirituality, what good is that? So I was very disappointed. So I decided to meditate myself. I knew how to chant Om, which everybody knows how to do. You know, Om, Om. So I thought, well, I'll discover for myself who God is and what this life is about, what happens at the time of death. So in order to do that, I went to a deserted island in the Caribbean. The Caribbean is near Florida, for those of you who don't know geography that well. So I went to a deserted island near in the Caribbean and started chanting Om. But then I was interrupted because there were wild boars there that were chasing me, you know, like big pigs or tusks. So I thought, well, at least I can go swimming. And then every time I tried to go swimming, there were these little things, the fins, in the water, you know, going back and forth, sharks. So I thought, well, maybe this is not the way. And then I thought, maybe I'll go to Europe. Because maybe Europe, they have more culture than America, right? Everybody thinks like that. So I took a plane to Europe, and I discovered they're doing the same thing they're doing in America, which is basically eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, you know, the same things. But they're just doing it in different languages and a different culture. Because that's all people were doing, you know, just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, you know, fighting. So wherever I went, it was the same thing. And I thought, nothing's working. So, of course, then I came back to America and I thought, well, let me just like read more. And while I was reading more, I got a job. And for those of you who don't know what job I had, I was driving a taxi. So we have many taxi drivers here, right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's a taxi driver, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, anyway. So I was driving a taxi because I had nothing else to do. And so while I was driving a taxi, several things happened. One thing, I was listening to the radio one day, and I heard this chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. It was Prabhupada, my spiritual master. And of course, I didn't know it at that time. And as soon as I heard it, my life started to change. I had already become a vegetarian because I understood that if someone wanted to be spiritual, someone wanted to find out the purpose of life, they had to be compassionate. And killing is not exactly a compassionate activity, is it? No, it's not very compassionate. So, anyway, so I heard Prabhupada chanting. Prabhupada, incidentally, is the founder of Acharya, the founder of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. He's the spiritual master who comes down in a chain of disciplic successions from Krishna himself, as described in this Bhagavad Gita, our main book. Evam parampara pratam imam rajarsa yogadahu. That spiritual masters, to be bona fide, to be authentic, have to come down in an unbroken chain. Just like even professors at the university. You can always ask a professor, who was your professor? You know, who gave you your PhD? And then you can ask that professor who gave you, if he's still alive, hopefully, who gave you your PhD? Now you can trace it out. Just like you can trace out your family history. You can do some genetic testing and find out, you know, who your forefathers were. So in the same way, if someone is going to be a bona fide spiritualist, they must have heard from someone else who was a bona fide spiritualist, because you can't make up your own spiritual philosophy. If you do that, it's going to be wrong. Why is it going to be wrong? Because we have defects. All of us have defects. I hate to tell you that. Is anyone here perfect in the room? Raise your hand if you're perfect. If you have no defects. If you have perfect senses. If you've never cheated anyone. If you've never made a mistake. Anyone here never made a mistake? I was speaking to one spiritualist, and he said, I only made one mistake in my life, he told me. He said, my mistake was that I thought I made a mistake. You understand? So, yes, we all make mistakes. So if we come up with our own philosophy, like it's a witch's broom, you know, we mix this philosophy, mix that philosophy, it's called eclectic. Then, just like in Macbeth, you know, everyone study Macbeth here? Double, double, boil and trouble, cauldron burn and cauldron trouble. You know, that's from Macbeth. Okay, a little education for all of you. So, then it will necessarily be faulty if I come up with my own philosophy. So you have to have someone who's authorized coming down in disciplic succession. And so, basically, I didn't have anyone, so I didn't have any philosophy. But I heard Prabhupada chanting. And because Prabhupada not only had the perfect philosophy, but Prabhupada was given the shakti. Shakti means power. From Krishna himself, the chanting went into my ear and went to my heart and changed my whole life just from hearing him once on the radio. Amazing, isn't it? Of course, There are several statements that in the Vedic literatures that talk about that, not talk about me specifically, but they say that Brahmanda Brahmate Konda Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhakti Lata Bij, which means that all of us are wandering from one body to another, even one planet to another. You know, maybe we were on Mars in our last life. But anyway, maybe we were a fish in our last life. Maybe we were cockroaches in our last life, and a devotee stepped on us. And that's how we got the mercy. So we're wandering from one lifetime to another. Brahmanda Brahmate Kunda Bhagavan. But if we're fortunate, Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai Vakti Lata Bij, we come in contact with a guru. If we're very fortunate, that takes great fortune. It's not that everybody gets that fortune, but someone who wants to find out what the purpose of life is, Krishna arranges that he comes in contact, he or she, comes in contact with a bona fide guru. It seems to be like accident. Like you see in the case of my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, of course, he was always a pure devotee, but the way he met his guru was quite interesting. It was 1922, not for me, that's for him. It was 1922, and he was in Calcutta, and his friend, his name was Naren, heard about Prabhupada's spiritual master, whose name was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he said to Prabhupada, my spiritual master, and everyone's spiritual guide, he said to him, you have to go see this great sadhu. Sadhu means great saintly person. And Prabhupada said, no, I'm not going to go to see him. Amazing. Why did he say no? Because he had met so many other so-called, quote, great saintly persons. His father, Prabhupada's father, had been entertaining so many saintly persons who were simply interested, as they say, in pounds, shilling, and pence. You know, money or enjoyment. You know, so Prabhupada thought, they're all like that. Sometimes you meet so many people who are cheaters, you think everyone's a cheater. It's not true. So he was thinking, this person's a cheater also. But still, his friend was insistent. His friend dragged Prabhupada to see Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and that was in 1922. And immediately when he met him, he accepted him as a spiritual master because he could see the spiritual energy, the spiritual qualities, the philosophy. And Prabhupada got his instructions from his guru the first time he met him. Prabhupada's instructions from his guru were, you should go to the Western world and preach in English Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada, he objected to that. He said, well, who's going to accept Krishna consciousness when India is still a captive nation? Because Prabhupada at that time was working with Gandhi's movement for Swaraj, you know, for independence. And so Prabhupada made that point, and his spiritual master basically, with philosophy, showed him that Krishna consciousness is transcendental to any political, material considerations. So that was how Prabhupada met a spiritual master. Of course, he meditated on the instructions of his guru immediately, but eventually it culminated in him coming to the Western world in 1965 and incorporating the Krishna Conscious Movement in 1966. And we're commemorating this day today. So in my case, I heard Prabhupada chanting, and my whole life I recognized him as my spiritual master immediately. And then, shortly thereafter, as I said, I was driving a taxi. It's good for all you taxi drivers. Another taxi driver gave me one of Prabhupada's books. You see, this is the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How nothing happens by accident. Those of you who are here in the temple for the first time, okay, some of the devotees here have been born in the movement. It's not your first time. You're here for the 10,000th time. But if you're here, there's a reason for it. Like if you're coming in contact with Krishna consciousness, whether it's the first time, 10,000th time, or whatever, there's a reason why you're here. You've been directed to be here by the Super Soul. Super Soul means Krishna is in your heart. And he's calling the shots. So when it's time for you to have spiritual life, Krishna says, okay, go to the Hare Krishna temple. Or, if you happen to be in the French Quarter, it's like we were talking to Rohini. Where's Rohini? Oh, there he is. We were talking to Rohini. If you're in the French Quarter distributing books, Krishna says to the person, okay, take that book from that person. So everything happens by the plan of Krishna. It's amazing. So I can see in my particular circumstance it happened. So I didn't meet Prabhupada right then. So then after that I got Prabhupada's book, the Krishna book. That was the first book I got. And I read it, but because the spiritual potency was so strong, I read one story in the Krishna book. It was about a little blue boy feeding butter to monkeys. No one knows what I'm talking about. Little blue boy who plays the flute, you know? No. Okay. That's Krishna, in case you haven't figured that out. And because of its spiritual potency was so strong, I kept thinking of that blue boy playing a flute and feeding butter to the monkeys, and even I was having dreams of that. And I thought I was going crazy. I was having dreams. So it was Krishna irresistibly, with his magnetism, drawing me in. So then what happened? I walked into a Hare Krishna temple. This was in 1969, before anyone here was born. I walked into a Hare Krishna temple, and first of all, I decided I didn't want to be a Hare Krishna devotee. The reason was because, you know, I was attached to my hair. Now there's not much more hair to be attached to. But in those days, we had long hair, long beard, and also I basically didn't want to dress like this. And it's not required. Actually, it's not required to dress like this, to shave your head, or anything like that, to be a devotee. You can be a devotee dressed in Western dress, and Chinese dress, and, you know, Indian dress, Malaysian dress. It really doesn't matter. But it, for me, it was quite shocking, the cultural difference. So I thought, you know, and also I met someone who was speaking the Krishna conscious philosophy, and he was speaking in a very, let's say, demanding, heavy way. He said, if you don't become Krishna conscious right now, beware of the law of karma. You could become a dog in your next life. And I said, I like dogs. So therefore, immediately surrender or you become a dog. And, you know, a lot of other heavy things. So we started talking about something called Kali Yuga, which is this age where everybody is... Anyway, if you read the news, you'll understand what Kali Yuga is. All you have to do is read the newspaper, or nobody reads newspapers anymore, but go on the internet and you'll see about the symptoms of Kali Yuga. So they were speaking so heavy to me, I just ran out the door as fast as I could. And from that day forward, whenever I saw a member of the Krishna conscious movement, I ran the other direction. I thought, I like them, I'm chanting, I'm a vegetarian, but wow. Not for me. Not for me. You know, I'll do it my own. I'll become my own guru, you know, Hare Krishna. So that was my plan. So I was doing that, practicing chanting Krishna consciousness, but I didn't want to go near the devotees. And what happened is that I was living on a farm in Gainesville, Florida, near Gainesville, Florida. It's not too far away from here. And I heard that His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, was coming to Gainesville. So somehow or other, when I heard that, Krishna in my heart, and when you hear it, we're talking about Krishna in the heart again, because it's described, by the mercy of Krishna, one gets Guru, and by the mercy of Guru, one gets Krishna. So Krishna in my heart dictated me to walk to the temple against my will. Children are little. The natives are restless. So Krishna in my heart dictated that I should walk to the temple against my will, and I told them, okay, I want to shave my head. You know, it's Krishna in the heart, because Krishna is there in the heart. And it's described in the Gita, what is that? Radesha Arjuna Tishtati Yantra Udani Maya Ishwara Sarvabhutana. Some of you know that Sanskrit verse. So I walked in the temple, and then 1 month later, 1 week later, sorry, then Prabhupada walked in to the temple. He was visiting there. And immediately when I met him, I had already accepted him basically in my heart as my spiritual master. Immediately when I met him, I decided to dedicate my life to teaching Krishna consciousness and working under Srila Prabhupada's directions. So it was all the arrangements of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then, basically, I started studying the Bhagavad Gita, learned the basic philosophy, which answered all the questions I had. As I mentioned before, I was looking for the questions in life. Where do I come from? Where am I going at the time of death? And the answers are very simple. Where do we go at the time of death? That depends on what we do in this lifetime. That's called karma. As you sow, you shall reap. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction, right? Newton's law of motion. So that's what determines. And we're changing bodies. There's reincarnation, which I already knew about. And not only that, but there's a purpose to the whole thing. You know, you may say, what's the purpose? You know, reincarnating, karma, and everything like that. The purpose is to transcend this material realm and enter into the spiritual planets. There are spiritual planets. It's a different dimension. You can't see them. You can't explore them go into outer space or telescopes or whatever. But there are spiritual planets that are in a different dimensional space. And the way to get there is through the process of yoga. The word yoga means basically to connect or to reconnect. So that's really what yoga is meant for. Of course, previously I was studying Hatha Yoga, which means all these different exercises, different asanas, and pranayam, yam, yam, asana, pranayam, dharana, dhyana, samadhi, the eightfold yoga process. But this that I was learning from Srila Prabhupada was called bhakti yoga. Not only the physical aspect of yoga, but the aspect of changing one's heart, the soul. Because you can do all the exercises for thousands of years and you won't really transcend this material world. You'll be better fit. You may be able to control your mind, but you won't be able to go back to the spiritual world. Because one can only go back to the spiritual world through love, through devotion, through the heart. And so I practice bhakti yoga, and I'm still practicing, hopefully, which consists mainly of chanting the holy name of Krishna, because the holy name of Krishna, I discovered, is non-different than Krishna. It's not a material sound. Material sound won't get you anywhere. You can chant, let's say, New Orleans all day long, and you won't get anywhere. But if you chant either Om, because Om is the same as Hare Krishna, or you chant Om or Hare Krishna, these are names of Krishna. And by chanting them, Krishna is personally present and you are purifying your heart and bringing your consciousness up to a higher level so you're able to see the spiritual dimension. It's not simply blind faith. Krishna describes in the Gita that when one is enlightened, it's like the sun coming up in the morning. When the sun comes up in the morning, first you begin to see shadows, black and white things. But when the sun comes up further, you see some colors. And then you can actually see everything that is there when the sun is fully up. So when you chant, it's not an artificial imposition of the mind. You don't have to force your mind to think of something. It's remembering who you already are. and what is already there, like the sun coming up in the morning. Just like when you wake up in the morning, let's say you have an alarm clock or an alarm mobile phone. Nobody uses clocks anymore, maybe they do. But let's say you have an alarm, even I have an alarm watch. So at first, you may not even remember where you are, right? Has anyone had that experience when you wake up in the morning? You think, especially when you travel a lot like me, you say, where am I? Am I in New Orleans? Or am I in North Carolina? Am I in Fiji? I'm in Australia, New Zealand. You know, I travel all over the place. Am I in Europe? Am I in the spiritual world? So sometimes it takes a few seconds to remember when you wake up through the sound vibration where you are. So the same way with chanting. You chant and it's revealed. You see, and the word in Sanskrit is pratyaksha. Pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam shushukam kartamabhyam. You actually begin to see the spiritual world. You begin to see Krishna. You begin to see your own spiritual identity. And that's Krishna consciousness. And that's the bhakti yoga system. And so, finally, the other thing I found out was who God is. Because there's different conceptions of God. In the Western world, sometimes they depict God as a very old man. Some of you have seen that picture in the Sistine Chapel, where God is reaching out, you know, very old. He has arthritis, rheumatism, another problem, heart condition, you know. Poor God. You send him to the hospital. But anyway, so you find out that God is Krishna. And then, you know, that's one name of God, but many names, millions of names, unlimited names. And God is the most attractive person. And he's the person, he and Srimati Radharani, because in the Krishna conscious movement, we're not simply male chauvinists. We believe that the Supreme Absolute Truth has a male aspect and a female aspect. Female aspect and a male one. And the female aspect comes first, right? We see Radha Krishna, we don't say Krishna Radha. That's pretty good, isn't it? So you ladies should feel good about that. Yeah, so we realize the full manifestation of the Absolute Truth of God, the Absolute Truth, in terms of Radha and Krishna. And we are able to understand what Krishna looks like, what Radharani looks like, where they live, what the spiritual world is like. You know, in the beginning it's theoretical, after a while you realize it. And you're able to know what their address is. Name, address, telephone number, email address, and WhatsApp, everything like that. Instagram, right? Everything in relationship to the Supreme Absolute Truth. And that's Krishna consciousness. So since I've been doing this, which was in 1971 when I first met Prabhupada, actually 68 when I first came in contact with Prabhupada, hearing him on the radio and reading his books, then I can say that all my desires for understanding and realizing it have been fulfilled, and every day gets better and better and better. It's not dull, dry religion where you simply repeat the same thing all the time. It's actually kevalananda kanda. It always becomes more blissful, more knowledge, more realization of the eternal identity. And that's why I'm here today, to communicate all that to all of you nice people. So, any questions or comments? Yes. Yes, sir.
Comment.
And
what you said is all true. It worked with me too in my life, in a way. And chanting does help to concentrate on Krishna.
Yes.
Concentrate on even your spiritual migration or movement.
Yes.
Planets, primarily, the spiritual planets.
Yes.
Which is all within us, which is around us.
Yes.
And we feel that transcendental. And another thing is this, I found that the concentration, and I also got the first book of the Bhagavad Gita, not of Prabhupada, but another English translation by when I was in England.
Right.
a friend of mine, I went to visit him, I was a student in the university, and he gave me a book. He just told me, he told me, read that book. I got that book, and I was so surprised, I mean, so much interesting, I thought it changed my whole life.
Wonderful.
I became vegetarian, always thinking about Krishna, seeing Krishna all the time, you know? And finally, I see Krishna in everything.
Wonderful.
Everything. I could not see a bad man or a woman.
Very nice. Very nice. Thank you very much. Okay, Romina, you had something?
Yes, Mark. Can you explain more about the mantra, Hare Krishna Mahamantra, what it means?
Oh,
what is the
okay.
First rules of chanting, and those first assignments,
okay.
what it means, and how we chant Hare Krishna properly.
Good. Yeah, so the Hare Krishna mantra is composed of three words, Hare Krishna and Ram. That's why it's Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. So, the word Hare refers to the feminine aspect of the Absolute Truth, sometimes referred to as Srimati Radharani. And in Sanskrit, the word Hare is considered to be linguistically in the what we call vocative form. Vocative means crying out. I mean, in English, we don't really have that form in our language, the vocative form. We have to combine two words to make something vocative. We have to say, oh, Joe, or oh, you know, but we don't have that form of the verb. So it means, oh, Radharani, crying out for Radharani. And Krishna also is in the vocative form. It means, oh, Krishna, oh, Radharani, oh, Krishna. And Ram is also vocative. So the meaning of the word is, of course, Radharani is the name of the feminine counterpart of the Supreme Person called the Godhead. And Krishna is the most attractive person. The word Krishna can be analyzed in the following way. Krish means to pull or to attract. And Na means to negate all your suffering. Also, Na means Ananda. We're getting a little technical here, but I think that's what you wanted. Ananda, which means bliss or happiness. So Krishna attracts us to bliss or happiness and negates all the suffering of this world. And then you have the word Ram or Rama, which means the enjoyer. So Krishna is the enjoyer, and we can enjoy in relationship to Krishna. So you put the whole Maha Mantra together. As my dear Radha and Krishna, let everybody come in first. Hare Krishna. So my dear Radha and Krishna, please engage me in your service. Please let me be involved in the spiritual energy. Please let me transcend this material world. Like that. And that's the meaning of the Maha Mantra. As I mentioned before, when we're talking about spiritual sound, the spiritual sound is the same as the object to which it refers. When we say Krishna, Krishna is there. When we say Radha, Radha is there. And we also contrasted that before with material sound. Material sound is just a designation for an object, but it's not the same as the object. Like we say, the words New Orleans are not the same as New Orleans. The word water is not the same as the object water. But the word Krishna is the same as Krishna. And if one can concentrate properly on this, avoiding certain things, basically inattention. I don't want to go through all the basic detriments or offenses that we talk about. If one can concentrate properly on it, the whole spiritual world will be revealed to one. Is that okay? And that's why we have the Maha Mantra. And you can chant the Maha Mantra at any time, any circumstance. There's no hard and fast rules. You can chant at night. You can chant before you go to sleep. You can chant when you wake up in the morning. You can chant while you're driving the car. Still pay attention to your driving. Anytime, any place, any circumstance. Yes?
Can you
Thank you.
Express my feeling.
Thank you.
As you know, while chanting Hare Krishna Hare Rama, for example, some people are doing it, but while they're chanting, at that time something else comes to the mind.
Yeah.
Concentration is disturbed. What if it happens? In some cases to me, also to others.
Right.
Share their experiences. Now, how to concentrate? It's a big thing. I want to chant Hare Krishna Hare Rama because in this Kali Yuga Yoga, only way that salvation is chanting Hare Krishna. And particularly for me, it's quite, it has been quite interesting at the same time thrilling too. Because Prabhupada, at the age of 70, he actually started organizing and movement for Hare Krishna. And in the shortest possible time, what happens? Throughout the world, he could raise some sort of consciousness and some sort of awareness for the need for chanting Hare Krishna. It's quite amazing and quite astonishing. Mm-hmm. Now, it has been possible in Bhagavad Gita at the age of 70
to do that.
Actually go for the Dharma, but he started in the Western world. And now, I think, as far as my knowledge is concerned, in more than 185 countries, you know,
right, exactly.
And I'm actually from Bangladesh too, and they're doing a lot of things. Right?
Wonderful.
Now the big problem, as I understand, many people want to chant Hare Krishna, but while they're doing it, something else comes to them, which stops the whole.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, at the end of this, the session, they come to realize, well, the purpose is not such. I want to chant Hare Krishna with devotion, but
I can answer that. Thank you for the point and thank you for the question. Yes, Krishna does say Arjuna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 6th chapter, he says the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, and to control it is more difficult than controlling the wind. So Krishna answers that. He says by constant practice and detachment. Now, what is that practice that helps us focus the mind? One has to be careful of not chanting mechanically. Now, the way to avoid that is one has to chant with the heart. And I'm going to tell one story to illustrate how to do that. Once upon a time, there was this little boy. His name was Dhruva. And he had a problem. His problem was, he had a stepmother, and the stepmother would not allow him to sit on his father's lap. That was hard for him. He was only 5 years old at that particular juncture. So he went to his mother, and he said to his mother, Suniti was his mother's name, that what can I do? And his mother said, you have to worship Vishnu, Krishna. And so he went to the forest to worship Vishnu Krishna, and he got a mantra, which is the same as the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you know, a little bit different formulation, from this great spiritual master, Narada Muni. Now, Narada Muni, like we described before, when one is ready for a spiritual master, Krishna will send a spiritual master. People who come to the temple, you're here for a specific purpose. Krishna sent you. So Krishna sent him, his spiritual master to him, and his spiritual master said, here's a mantra. And the mantra was Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. So he began to chant that mantra with such attention that his austerities, he forgot to eat. He forgot basically to breathe. I'm not going to mention all of his austerities because you'd all be frightened to hear the story. But he became so focused on the names of Krishna in that particular formulation, because there's many names of Krishna, that his mind didn't wander. Now, why didn't his mind wander? Because he had something we call a sankalpa. Now, those of you who are from India know what a sankalpa is. Sankalpa means an intention, a reason from the heart. What was his reason? He wanted to have a great kingdom, so his father would let him sit on his lap. Pretty good intention. So I don't think any of you have problems with your father. No? So you don't have that particular problem. But one has to have an intention that's strong. So everyone who wants to be attentive while they're chanting needs to look in their heart and find out what is their sankalpa, what is their reason, intention. What do you want? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the eight prayers that he has written, which I think you're familiar with, called the Shikshastika, he's given us different intentions. One that I'm very, not only familiar with, but I use all the time is Ainanda Tanuja Kinkaram Patitam Mam Bishame Bhavan Pundo Kripya Tava Padabhanka Stita Dulisadra Sambhachintya, which, for those of you who don't understand Sanskrit, it means, Krishna, I am trapped in this material world. Please help me, fix me up as one of the atoms that you're loaded. In other words, there has to be that emotional connection with why you're chanting to be able to chant properly. If it can't be from the brain, if it's just from the brain, well, I'm supposed to chant, I have to chant, it's nice to chant, you won't be attentive. But if you have some deep emotional reason, and as far as I am concerned, I have every day, I have a different emotional reason. What do I mean? Sometimes I'm praying for this person or that person. Sometimes I'm praying for myself, you know, chanting for myself. I want to, please save me, Krishna. Please let me understand who I am. Sometimes I'm praying, there's somebody who's having trouble. You know, someone comes to me and says, I'm having trouble, I'm struggling in spiritual life, so I will chant for them. But each and every time when we chant, when I chant, I try to have that emotional connection, and that keeps it focused. Because that's from the heart. Chanting should be done from the heart. Of course, we move our lips and tongue, we use our mind, but the heart has to be engaged. And you have to be thinking about what you're doing when you're doing. Otherwise, you're an automatic pilot. You know what automatic pilot is? I used to fly a plane. And we had in the plane automatic pilot. Automatic pilot means you set your destination or where you're going or the direction you're going in, and you don't have to touch the steering wheel. It's pretty good, isn't it? And nowadays, some of the cars have automatic pilot. But the problem is, when the people put their cars on automatic pilot nowadays, what is the problem? Nobody knows the story about Tesla?
Yeah.
They have accidents. And there was someone who had two commercial pilots who had their plane on automatic pilot. And they were talking about cricket games or whatever they're talking about, or rugby games or whatever they were talking about. And the plane overshot the runway by about 200 miles. You know, it didn't start to land, of course. It just went, kept going, and the U.S. Air Force sent up some jets to shoot it down because they thought it had been hijacked. And then they discovered, turned the plane back, and they got fired, those pilots. So the moral of the story is don't put your chanting on automatic pilot. Chant from the heart. That's the real point. Like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of our great spiritual masters, says that the cause of all the detriments or offenses in chanting are due to inattention. So that's my... And it'll take some time. It takes practice. It takes practice. But if you take that simple hint to heart, you will find yourself be able to chant much more attentively. There's a phone. So, one more question before we go. One more question. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you told that all when you chanted, that never triggered the kind of emotion which was triggered by Hare Krishna.
That's right.
Apart from Guru Buddhist. Now, does it mean that different mantra, different people has different trigger for different mantra? Means some mantra works for somebody, some mantra works doesn't work for somebody?
That's a good question. Om is actually a spiritual sound vibration too. I did have effects from chanting Om, but the difference is to chant or be connected with the mantra properly, one has to hear the mantra from the spiritual master. There's this statement in the Vedic literatures, and the Sanskrit is Sampradaya Vinaya Mantras Te Nishpalabhaha. The mantra must be received in disciplic succession. So Om is non-different from Hare Krishna, don't get me wrong. It's actually composed of three syllables, A, U, and M, which refers to Radha Krishna and the living entity. However, at that particular time, I had not been given that mantra to chant, and Srila Prabhupada, my spiritual master, gave me the mantra, following in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the mantra Hare Krishna. Because this mantra Hare Krishna is actually the foremost, most powerful mantra in this age of Kali. There's the statement in the Brihadnaradiya Purana, which some of you are familiar with. Harinam, 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 Harinam eva kevalam, kalonishteva, nishteva, nikishteva, gatiranyata. That in this age of Kali, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, which we read about every day, there is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way than chanting Harinam. And then Krishna himself appeared 500 years ago as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach the specific formulation of the names of God to the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And you could experience the potency just like when we now chanted it. Everybody's just like, wow, I can see the spiritual world. Practically, you could, he says, isn't it? We'll try it again. And then you can experience it. Chant it with your heart and you'll experience it. Hare
Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
That's powerful. And you're all going back to Godhead now. Because your spiritual path has started, you're guaranteed not to take any other birth other than a human birth. Pretty good. We've given you all success now, right? You're all initiated in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Actually, Lord Chaitanya initiated the whole universe. So, I think it's time for prasadam now. Okay, and we'll be available for more questions during prasadam. Yes?
Yesterday you were mentioning that we should chant in a quality time. Yeah, I have tried that, but mine still wander around.
Yes.
So, is there any way I can just tie that like a dog? Mind is like a dog.
Yes, like I was discussing.
1 minute I'm concentrating, next second is gone.
Have a reason for chanting. Think about your reason. Before you start chanting, think, I am chanting because I want blank, blank, blank. That's for you to determine, not for me. Your reason has to be personal. I am chanting. Why are you chanting? You should always be asking yourself, why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? Otherwise, whatever activity you're doing is like on automatic pilot. You're disconnected. That's the problem with most religions. And even here, is that we tend to put ourselves on automatic pilot. We can't tend, like one devotee said to me one time, wake me up when my rounds are done. So it's like automatic pilot. I drive a car, and sometimes when I drive a car, and I get to a destination that I'm familiar with, or the road that I'm familiar with, I don't even remember how I got there. You ever had that experience?
Yeah.
When you're driving, you're just like, did I drive here? Because it's on automatic. I mean, fortunately, you get there safely. But with the chanting, it should be done from the heart. Therefore, you ask yourself, why am I chanting? Don't do things because you have to. That's a really miserable frame of mind. That I'm chanting because I have to. That's a terrible frame of mind.
No, I'm happy to do
it. I know. But remember why. I know you're happy doing it, but remember why. In every minute, I'm chanting because I want to connect with Krishna. Krishna. Oh, remember the verse from the Shikshashtaka. Oh, Krishna, I'm your eternal servant. Somehow or other, I've fallen down this horrible ocean of birth and death. please fix me up at the adamant, as an adamant, your lotus feet. So, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare.
Then it has real power. Power. So, it takes practice. I'm not saying immediately, wow, that's it, that's the trick. But if you remember why you're doing what you're doing, then at every minute, keep pulling the mind back. You'll be able to be attentive. Okay, thank you very much. All those who think about it.